Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on homeschool when we come back. You know, when people call the law school, they ask oftentimes how they can learn more about the topics that I speak on over the air. Well, keep in mind that most of these subjects that you hear on the radio, I teach in detail in one of my classes here at the law school. Now, for example, when you hear me talking about the common law, it was a fellow by the name of Alfred the Great who codified the common law back in 872 AD. He divided it up into 49 principles or statutes, of which 22 of those statutes are incorporated into our federal Constitution and Bill of Rights. This common law was taken from the Mosaic Law given to Moses at Mount Sinai by God himself, and it was recorded in Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8, and it includes laws like negligence and insurance and taxes, such as income tax, property tax, and social security taxes. Now, these IRS tax laws are a counterfeit of the tithing laws in the scripture, and they work a theft on everybody that participates in them. Now, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob gave us a better way of life than income tax and social security, and that's the basis of our tax and status quo. Now, we owe this income tax and the social security tax because we've contracted into it. Have you ever thought about uncontracting out of it? Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status, why don't you write for our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. Just call and ask for one. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're bashful and you don't want to call, you can go online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, and then download it off of our archives page. So you go to georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you'll find that free general law CD package there. Push the right buttons, and you can download it. Now, we're talking about homeschool. There's an article here from MSNBC News talking about a panel in Chicago urging a writing revolution. Writing revolution. Now, I'm an old-timey employer, and I can tell you that if you can't write, you probably can't work. If you can't communicate with people, you know, what am I going to use you for? You come to work for me, and I tell you that I want you to write this or that. There's a second side to that. I'm going to write you a written instruction. Don't you think you have to be able to read? And if you can't read, can you write? And if you can't write, can you read? So big corporations here in America are spending millions of dollars. It's in the billions when you combine them all together to re-educate American workers. Here in America, outfits like Hewlett-Packard and Kodak and IBM are spending millions of dollars to educate their employees, not their executives now, their employees that working out here in the production facilities, to teach these people some basic skills. They have to be able to read and write and communicate and write reports and do some basic math and things like that in order to carry out their jobs. And they didn't learn that in the public school, so they're going to have to teach them here in the workplace. Now, that's got some ramifications to it. The Dell company, big computer outfit, they're going to spend $100 billion. Now get this. This is $10 billion a year. Over the next 10 years, that's $100 billion building factories and upgrading their facilities and doing all those things that this company does. And they're not going to spend a dime of it in the United States of America. They're going to spend it all overseas. Why? Why? Well, because it's cheaper to do business overseas. And secondly, the workforce overseas is smarter and they don't have to retrain them. For instance, if they build their factory in Singapore, Singapore is now rated the number one educational workforce in the world. Did you know that? Yeah, Singapore. Used to be the United States of America, but now we're number 16. We're just mediocre now, right in the middle of the pack. We're not the smartest. We're not the dumbest. We're just mediocre, right in the middle. So if you're an executive with one of these big companies, you know, like Walmart or something like that, and you say, well, let's build a factory. Now, where do we want to build it? Well, let's build it in Los Angeles. Oh, yeah, Los Angeles. That's where the people in Los Angeles don't know how many stars there are in the American flag. And Jay Leno was out on the street jaywalking, and he was asking people, and he said there was an American flag fluttering up here in the sky, you know, up here on top of a building. And he asks this young woman, you know, a young woman probably 20 to 25 years old, stopped her on the street, and he says, how many stars are in that flag up there? And she looked up at the flag, and she said, it's waving so fast I can't count them. Now, this is the flag of the United States of America. This is not a tourist from Norway. This is an American probably has a college degree, if you can believe it. Looks up at the American flag and says, I don't know how many stars are in it. Well, I wouldn't expect a Norwegian nor a Frenchman to know how many stars are in the United States flag. That might not be relevant in France or Norway, but it's pretty relevant here in the United States. There's 50, 13 stripes, and those stripes have a meaning. And every one of those stars has a meaning, you know? And we should have learned that by at least second grade. I think we learned that in the first grade, as I recall. But long before I got to Mrs. Wiles in the third grade, I knew how many stars there were in the flag. When I was a kid, it was 48. 48, see. It had the same 13 stripes, and it has the same meaning today as it had in 1947 when I was in the third grade. And this young woman didn't know that. Now, why didn't she know that? She went to public school. Now, she might have been to homeschool, and maybe her parents didn't teach her that, and maybe she didn't pick that up someplace. And that could be. Ignorance is widespread. We don't all know everything there is to know, but when we sample what people do know about geography or history, or in this case here where we're talking about writing, are you able to write an intelligent communication so that you can instruct somebody out there on the floor or out there in the mill or out in the shipping department, you know, you give them a written communication. Can you read that communication and can he carry out the instructions contained therein? And the answer is no. I don't know how many, but it's a great proportion of American workers that can't do that. So the CEO of Dell says, well, they can read and they can do that in Singapore, so that's where we're going to build our factory. They can do that in China, so that's where we're going to build our factory. They can do that in the Philippines and so on. So they talk a lot about having a trained, literate workforce, and that they're sending you people to school here so that they can train you to go to work in the workforce, in the economy. And certainly many people are competent, qualified. I'm not saying we're all dumb. We all are incompetent and unqualified. But many of us are, and the answer to that is none of us should be. None. Zero. When I was in the third grade, every one of Mrs. Wild's 32 students could read, and we all passed into the fourth grade. There weren't any failures, and every one of them could read. And those were the days when if you could not produce the third grade work curriculum, you could not be passed into the fourth grade. And it hurt our self-esteem. And I was so terrified of being left behind that I worked harder. It actually motivated me to work harder, otherwise I'd be left behind. And I would be in school next year in Mrs. Wild's third grade with the second graders, and I didn't want that. So I worked hard, and I got my work in, and I did everything, and I learned how to do things. In fourth grade, I had to learn my times tables, and I did that. Well, as time progressed along, we had to learn how to write, and I learned how to do that in public school, if you can believe it. But something has happened now over the years, and as Charlotte Isherby points out, we're not teaching writing in schools. And here's an article that describes this. You can ask high school juniors to write a paragraph about a haunted house, and nearly half are unable to do that. That's because writing has been neglected in school reform, according to a report by the National Commission on Writing in America's Schools and Colleges. So students finish high school without the ability to write in a sophisticated, precise, or engaging fashion, the commission says. Now I want to pause right here. Remember I told you about my daughter? My daughter could write up a storm. She could write whole books. In fact, she did. She wrote a book, and she was writing short stories. She would read Nancy Drew stories, and then she'd sit down and write a mystery story of her own. Now, if my daughter can learn how to do that, why can't your daughter or your son do that? Now, it isn't that my daughter is ever going to be a mystery writer. She's never going to be, in all probability now, you know, she's never going to be an Agatha Christie. But she could be if she so desired. Now, would her work sell and would she make millions of dollars like Agatha Christie? Probably not. But her skill at being able to write, she could go to work for any bank or insurance company because she can write reports. If she can write a mystery story, she can write a report. She can put three or four sentences together and communicate information from one person to another. She can read the same information and get an instruction and then go carry it out. And after all, that's the purpose for school. That's the purpose, isn't it? It's to take somebody that's 6 years old and he can't read and write and to teach this kid the code so that he can read and write. And so we used to start off with phonics and say, okay, here's the code. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And here's the sounds of these words. Guh. And ja, and s, you know, s is s, sounds like a snake hissing. I remember my first grade teacher, you know, describing these sounds, oh, that sounds like a snake hissing, so that I could remember s and the sound of it. So, you know, within a couple of 3 weeks, pretty soon I could sound all of the letters, and then we could take on words, you know, like c. And so I knew e, and I knew s, that snake in the grass, and so I would visualize c, Jane, run. And so as time progressed along and we got through the process a little bit further and further, pretty soon I got to the point where I can write. Now, the other day I told you I wrote 12,000 pages here. So I actually didn't write 12,000 pages. I copied a lot of it. Some of that material, you know, is reproductions and one thing and another. But I compiled it all. I was able to put chapter, looking at my textbook here, I've got 46 chapters here. I was able to start off with a logical beginning in chapter one with the Communist Manifesto, and then I was able to come to a conclusion in the entire process. We're going from here, the Communist Manifesto, to here in chapter 46 with Wolf Company versus Industrial Court. And what is a private business and what is a public business? What's the difference? And in between, there's a story that's coming out. And so when you come to school, we need to communicate to you what causes the income tax. Why do we have it? Where'd it come from? What's the history behind it? And what's the contract that you signed when you signed up for income tax? And the answer is Social Security. And it's located in Title 42, Section 301. And I can write that out, and I can communicate that to you, and I can take you through that story from step one to step 46 and explain that to you so that you can understand it. And then you can do what you want with it, you know. Choice is yours. Now, in according to this, most people can't do that. Now, if they can't do that, well, then we can't hire you in the insurance industry. We can't put you in the bank. Well, then that leaves you then with setting chokers out in the woods, which isn't necessarily a bad job, but we're going to have to do something other than writing because that's not where your talents lie. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story here. I was watching a PBS special. I think it was, take that back. It wasn't PBS. It was 60 Minutes. And the correspondent is at a school in Chicago. It's a black school. It's a black private school, of which all of the students, little black boys and girls in the school, they're all black. And all of these students are sitting here and they're reciting Shakespeare. I was absolutely amazed. I couldn't believe it. And the teacher, black teacher, and she's down in the slums of Chicago. I don't know where it's at. Cabrini Green or someplace, you know. And she points out, we don't have playgrounds. We don't have balls and swings and a sports program. What we have here is academic excellence. And this black teacher is teaching little black boys and girls to speak English. And so Mike Wallace or somebody, he sticks a microphone under this little black kid's face. This kid maybe is 10, 12 years old. And this little black child speaks perfect, fluent English. You'd never know that this kid was black. Here in America, black people have their own speech. We call it, there's a name for that, guttural or something. It starts with a G, I believe it is. It's gutter vernacular is what it is, but they've got a gula or a Ebola or Ebula or something like that. It's totally incomprehensible to the rest of us who speak English in this country. We don't know what the hell they're talking about. Got their own words and their own language. So when one of these blacks comes into my factory and he can't fill out a job application, can't write. Then he can't even talk. He can't even speak English. Hey, like, man, hey, that's really groovy and that's jivey and hey, that's cool. And cool means temperature. You know, cool is referring to temperature. It's not referring to, hey, that's something that I really like or enjoy. These people can't speak, but these black children could all speak perfect fluent English. They could quote Shakespeare. These people, I was amazed because I didn't think black people could do that. I didn't think that Shakespeare and black people went together, but I was corrected there. And I should have been able to figure that out because black people who are educated in Great Britain or in the British Commonwealth, they can all speak English, but in America they can't. Well, there might be a few here and there that can, but it's rare. It's rare. Now, these same people suffer an unemployment rate, and I think it's around 20-25%. And then they're sitting here saying, well, we can't understand why it is that these black people in America have an unemployment rate that's twice the national average. I can. They can't read, they can't write, they can't speak. What in the hell are you going to use them for? They go to public school and they get a diploma at the end of their 12 years that says, I'm educated. You bring them into your office, they can't fill out a job application. What in the hell are you going to do with them? Well, you got to re-educate them. Well, I'm not in the education business. I'm in the furniture business. I'm in the school business. I'm in the farming business. I'm not here to teach you how to read and write, son. And that's the point that these people are bringing up. The public schools aren't teaching these people to go out into the workplace, to go out into the world. Now, they tell us they are. See, the president says, we're training Americans for the workforce in our public schools and blah, blah, blah. No, they're not. That's what they're telling you. That's the cover story. That's what you want. That's what you want to buy. That's what you're paying for. But that's not what you're getting. So if you think your child is learning morality in the public school, I showed you in the last lesson there, I said that. No, they're teaching these people how to lie, steal, and cheat. And then they're not teaching them how to read and write. And then Americans can't read and write. That's the tragedy of the whole public school system. They're not doing it. Now, you're sitting there saying, well, I can't teach my kid how to read and write either. Listen, I didn't teach my daughter how to read and write. It was the homeschool program that taught her that. It was the home environment. It was the school environment that she was in here. That's what taught her to read and write. That's what taught her how to write a book. If you put this child into an environment that is teaching them this Ebola or Ebonics or whatever the word is that they use to describe this gutter vernacular that black people speak in America, they will learn what it is that you're teaching them. And if you're going to teach them this Ebonics, that's what they'll learn, and that's what they'll go out into the workplace and try to sell. Now, when this young black kid comes into my office with his Ebonics, and hey, man, that's really cool, and he may be a great rapper, unfortunately, I'm not buying rap. I'm not interested in his language. Here, where I am and what I do, I have to have people that speak English, that can read and write, who can communicate information, who can do the job that I have to do. And these people can't do that, so I don't hire them. And then they say, well, Gordon, you're a racist, you see. You don't have black people working for you. Hey, and I did when I was in Idaho. I had one black guy working for me. And the government came after me one day, and they were after me because I didn't have a diversified workforce. Now, you got to get this one in perspective because, see, in Idaho, the whole state had 2,600 blacks in the whole state. For you to have a black person working for you was highly unusual. Well, hell, there was only 2,600 of them to go around, and I happened to have one. Now, in the state, you had to have one out of 60. I think when you had 60 employees, statistically, you should have one black. Well, I had 30 employees, and I had one black, and I had double the standard. I only needed a half a black, but I had one whole one. And I had him working for me. He's a pretty good guy, too. He could read, he could write, and he could speak English. I mean, this guy was educated, and he fit right into the program. He was talented. He was smart. And it was refreshing. I wasn't sure that they had any of those here in the United States, but we had one. I had him working for me. Great guy. Now, here's the moral to the story. If that black guy could learn to speak English, read and write, and carry on, I would submit to you that every black in America could if he was put into that environment. And that means that all of you black parents out there, you could turn out a child like the lady I'm telling you about in Chicago. If that lady can turn out black students who can speak fluent English without an accent, who can read and write Shakespeare, so can you. And there's programs out there, homeschooling programs, that you can buy that'll do that. And they're inexpensive. I mean, we're not talking about thousands of dollars like public schools do. These public schools, they spend tons of money on sports stadiums and arenas and all kinds of extravagant stuff, music and bands and marching bands. Hey, this black school in Chicago, they didn't have a marching band. They didn't have a music program. They didn't have a sports program. They didn't have a playground. They didn't have a basketball. And this lady, the school teacher, this black school teacher, she said, I'm not here to teach basketball and sports. I'm here to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic and literature. I'm here to teach Shakespeare. I'm not teaching basketball. Now listen, you send your kid to public school and he turns out to be a great basketball player. Well, that's what they teach in public school. They teach basketball. And if you want your kid to learn basketball, I can't think of a better place to go. Basketball, football, tennis, baseball. Now, send your kid out and have him knock on my door, then he can say to me, hey, listen, I was all state in basketball. And I'm going to look at him and say, God, that's wonderful. I'm happy for you. Okay, now we're running a law school here. Now, what is it that you know about the Supreme Court reports? And he looks at me and says, what? Yeah, the Supreme Court reports. Now, this kid probably knows every vital statistic of the top 10 baseball players in America and how many earned runs they get and how many home runs they hit and all that. That's great. You know, what you need to do is to go look for a job where they're looking for people that can recite baseball statistics. I remember when I went to school, there was a kid there. My God, this kid was smart. He knew every baseball statistic. He could tell you when Ty Cobb, stole a base and what game it was in and how many stolen bases he had one year and how many home runs he hit and all that. But where in the hell are you going to use that when you get out in the real world? What are you going to do with it? I call that useless knowledge. And public school teaches a tremendous amount of useless knowledge. Maybe it's fun. And maybe all the rest of the kids are really bedazzled by all these fun facts that you know. But what the hell are you going to do with it out in the real world? Well, my daughter can write a book. And my daughter can read and write. But unfortunately, American students coming out of public school can't. And they're pointing that out here. And they say, the group calls for writing to be assigned in all classes for teachers and professors to be trained in how to teach writing and for tests to be revamped so they can measure how well students compose prose. Commission members said Friday that America needs a culture change, one in which the public sees improved writing as a vital national interest. I think we have a great foe. I think it's apathy. I think it's low expectations, said Gaston Caperton. He's the president of the College Board, which created the Commission of Teachers, Superintendents, and University Leaders. Now, the group released its findings on Friday at the Education Writers Association annual conference. Group leaders acknowledged that they faced obstacles, mainly securing more money so teachers get training and staff support as they add time-consuming assignments. I put brackets around that. Do you see the solution to this? These children can't write, and so we need more money. That's the buzzword. These academians here, they're not here to teach your children writing. This is like a religious guy on TV. He's not here to teach you the scriptures. He's here to raise money for the church. That's his job. And he spends, you know, take these televangelists, they're on the air for an hour. I spend about 45 minutes telling you to send them money, and 15 minutes they're sitting there talking about religion but not the Bible. I don't think I've ever seen one of these televangelists open the Bible and say, let's see if we can learn a lesson from Samson and Delilah. What's the lesson to be learned here from Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, or Daniel in the lion's den, or Joseph and the famine of Egypt? What's the moral to the story here? What's the purpose for the creator of the universe to take a whole chapter and write it into the scripture? You know, like Genesis 47, what was his motivation? Now, God is a great writer, and he writes a lot, and he puts in neat stories. He's a great storyteller. And he explains that he's got a reason for every story. He says, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. If you wanted to be a great writer, if you would read the writings in the scripture, you would learn how to write, how to communicate thoughts, how to tell a story with a moral, so that people can learn something from it, so that I can avoid making a mistake in the future that could make me a lot of money as time progresses along. Those are the lessons to be learned. Now, when I see this here, what we need is more money. Listen, the lady that I just told you about in Chicago, the black school teacher, she's running a little small private school, has about 30 students in it. And every one of those students in there is academically superior to anything that I've ever seen. I mean, I could not believe. And they're black. That's a thing that was just mind-blowing. I couldn't believe that black kids could learn that. If they'd have been white, I'd say, well, you know, I'd expect that from a white kid. Now, that tells me a story. If this black teacher can teach black students Shakespeare and teach them how to read and write, and she's not spending any time at all on basketball or playing out in the playground, they have recess. Okay, they have recess. But during recess, they do not go out in the playground and play. That they're doing academic work at recess, academic play. Now, if that's what you want to turn out, then that's what you do to get that result. You get a result from what you do. If you want students who cannot speak English, but who are great at jive, and who can and recite baseball statistics and play basketball, public school is the greatest place in the world. That's what they do. That's what they teach. That's the purpose for the program. Then when they get to the end of the program, 12 years later, these people can't write a report, can't fill out an application for employment, and can't speak English. Well, you know. After all, that isn't what we trained them to do. Now, do you have a job for people that can't speak English but can throw basketballs through hoops and recite baseball statistics? Are there companies hiring people to recite baseball statistics, stuff balls through hoops, and speak, what's that language? It's not Ebola. It's God, I can't even remember it to repeat it twice. It's so damn dumb. But anyway, it's that black guttural language. They can save their time, effort, and energy applying for work here because I haven't got any jobs for those people. Okay, so maybe I'm a racist. You know, I'm not here. I don't have any customers that want to buy that. And neither does Dell Computer or IBM or Walmart. I don't have any customers to buy that either. So without customers to buy it, these people are being taught and trained in the public schools in useless nonsense that they can't use anywhere. Bottom line. So now you can change that. That's my point. You can correct that. You can buy the curriculum for the homeschooling program, stick it into your computer, and you can teach your kid Shakespeare. Not that I'm thinking that Shakespeare has a lot of value either, but as an alternative to basketball and baseball statistics, I think it might have more value at IBM. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School at Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page and download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate and endorse the Law Hour. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Now, there was another story in here that I want to bring to your attention. Right here. Yeah, teacher fired. And there's a teacher here that's been fired because he was a racist. Yep, the guy's a racist. Now, listen to this story. I'm going to show you here what's going on in your public schools as it relates to free speech. Teacher fired for racial remarks. Eastern Kentucky man sent email to school staff. A Harlan County high school teacher who had been suspended after he sent an email saying in part that African Americans are responsible for about 90% of violent crimes and the main achievement of Martin Luther King Jr. was the introduction and promotion of communism, unquote, has been fired. Ralph Crow, 48, a Spanish teacher at Everts High School, received a dismissal letter yesterday from school district superintendent Timothy Saylor, who held that Crow's email was insensitive and demonstrated conduct of an immoral character. And I'm going to underline the words immoral character. Crow sent the email on February 21st to about 40 staff members at Everts High School. He said that the achievements of whites are ignored, so non-achieving minorities can have the spotlight. Crow said yesterday his email was meant as sarcasm and that he is a victim of political correctness and an overzealous superintendent. He's using his personal political views to silence me, Crow said of Saylor yesterday. He's basically set out to destroy my teaching career. Crow said that his right to free speech was violated and that he plans to appeal his firing. He said he hasn't yet hired an attorney. Saylor, that's the superintendent of schools now, in a letter to Crow, told the teacher that he had violated State Board of Education and County School District policies with his use of the school district's email system. Crow also violated county school regulations on harassment and discrimination. Oh, wait a minute. Let me interrupt. Harassment and discrimination, Saylor wrote. Now, Saylor, remember, he's the superintendent. Saylor declined to discuss Crow's dismissal yesterday. I can't really discuss it except to say it's been taken care of, he said. Jeff Vessels, the executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Kentucky, said the email raises interesting free speech questions. It has to be determined, Vessels said, whether Crow committed a violation by using school resources to convey his message and whether his opinions create a bias against any students. Crow has 10 days to inform Saylor and the Kentucky Department of Education of his intent to challenge his dismissal, said Lisa Gross, a spokeswoman for the department. That's a 3-member tribunal from outside Harlan County, would then conduct a hearing on the matter. Now, as grounds for the dismissal, Saylor wrote in the letter that Crow's conduct could cause great disruption in the school system. I'm going to underline that, great disruption. There's a little bit more to the article over here talking about what, you know, the legal consequences are. But let me go back here to the first paragraph. And let's take a look at this free speech. And let's see, all you black people out there, listen to this. Now, pay attention now. Listen to what he said. He said, African Americans are responsible for about 90% of violent crimes. Let's just take that statement. Is that a true statement? Here in the United States of America, are black people, African Americans, responsible for about 90% of violent crime in the country? Think about that for a minute. If your answer is no, they don't, can you tell me, well, then what percentage of violent crime is ascribed to black African Americans in the United States, and what percentage is ascribed to Orientals, Hispanics, whites, American Indian, and so on? Can you tell me? If the answer is, well, I don't know what the percentages are, well, then you're not in any position to offer an opinion, then, are you? I know. And the answer is, it's about 90%. Now, that's a true statement. Should he make that true statement? Let me ask you this. What's wrong with making a true statement? You know, 90% of all blondes have blue eyes. Is there something wrong with that? You know, people that work at the FBI, they have to compile crime statistics. They have to write reports and compile these and then publish that. And I don't know, maybe it's offensive to black people that 90% of violent crimes in the United States are committed by black people. Get this, 60% of all crime, period, is committed by black people, who represent about 12% of our population. Now, that's pretty significant, because the question in America has devolved upon this, and they've said this for a long time, that there's a disproportionate number of blacks in prison. Half of the prisoners in America are black. Well, excuse me, but if somebody commits a crime, and he's convicted and he's put in prison, isn't he in prison because he committed a crime, irrespective of his color? I don't know of any cases where a white guy goes out, robs a bank, and the police go out, capture a black guy, lock him up in jail to punish the black guy for the white guy robbing the bank. I think, now, correct me if I'm wrong, send me a letter. I think that the police are arresting the people that robbed the bank, and when the guy happens to be black or white or American Indian or whatever, I think that's the guy they're locking up, that's the guy that they're convicting. So when the statistics show us that half the people, we got was it 2 million now locked up in jail, and half of them, that is 50%, are black, well, it's because 60% of the crime committed in the country is done by blacks. And so it shouldn't be surprising that 60% of the prisoners locked up in jails are black. That should not be surprising. Now, 25% of the crime in the country is committed by Hispanics, and they represent 13% of the population. So get this. Get this. One-fourth of our population, 12% black, 25% Hispanic. That represents 25% of Americans, commit 90% of the crime. That's really disproportionate. Something's wrong here. These people aren't learning the Ten Commandments. They're not learning thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, etc., wherever it is, whether it's at home or public school or whatever. Those two minority groups aren't learning that there. So when this teacher said, as a matter of free speech, he said, hey, I think 90% of the violent crime in America is being committed by blacks. That's a true statement. I find it hard to find anything worth firing in this guy. But it's politically incorrect. You're not supposed to say that about blacks. Now, you can say whites are a bunch of dirty, low-down scoundrels. You know, they're oppressors and discriminatory. That's okay. Nobody would fire this guy if he were to launch some tirade against whites. But if he does it against some group over here and tells the truth in the process, he gets fired. He made a second statement here. Listen to this second statement that he made. And he said, the main achievement of Martin Luther King Jr. was the introduction and promotion of communism. Was Martin Luther King a communist? I'm just asking you. Martin Luther King, was he a communist? And the answer is yes, and unqualified yes. Is it a crime to be a communist? No. Did Martin Luther King have a right to espouse his communist views? Certainly. So why do we want to fire the school teacher for saying Martin Luther King was a communist and 90% of black people in America, or 90%, he didn't say black people in America, he said 90% of the violent crime committed in the country is done by blacks. Why would we want to fire the guy for telling the truth on two points? I got to make a little admission here. Until I was 37 years old, George Gordon was a practicing communist. If you would have asked me, are you a communist, I would have denied it. I would have said, no, I'm not a communist. But I attended public school. I sent my children to public school. I paid the second plank of the Communist Manifesto income tax. I kept my bank account at Bank of America. That's the fifth plank. I had a social security number. That's the eighth plank. And I practiced the other six as well. George Gordon practiced all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto until I was 37. That was the year that I learned that I was a practicing communist. And I said, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be a practicing communist. Now, why am I doing this? And so I quit. And I've been teaching other people the same thing. So if I say to you, you are a practicing communist, let me ask you this. Did you attend public school? That's the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. If there's just that one question, answered affirmatively, you are a 10% practicing communist. That's a true statement. Let me ask you this. Do you pay a heavy progressive income tax? Whether you agree with it or not, do you pay it? Well, that's the second plank. So you're practicing the second plank. You can say, well, I'm doing it against my will. What the hell? You're doing it. You got a bank account, credit cards, checks. That's the fifth plank. You know, all the guy is doing here is telling the truth. I don't think people should be fired for telling the truth, for crying out loud. Now, maybe he should be fired for using school computers to send the email. I don't know. Maybe he shouldn't have been, he should have used his own computer to make that statement. Maybe that's where his mistake is. That's going to be decided, you know, by this panel or something like that. But here's the moral to the story. This is what's going on in your public school system over here. We have censorship in the public schools, and the teachers in the public schools, God help them if they utter a thought out of their own minds. You school teachers out there, God help you now if you go out there and exercise your First Amendment right to free speech there in your public school. You have to espouse, you have to repeat like an automaton, you know, like a robot, just exactly what the school policy prescribes. And here's what you say and here's what you don't say. Well, isn't that censorship? Isn't that what you teachers are over here saying? Well, you Christians over here, you know, you employed censorship. You know. Now, see, what's going on out here is the exact opposite. Here's where George Orwell shines in his book, 1984. And I mentioned this to you the other day. I'll mention it to you again. George Bush enacted the Bush tax cuts in 2003. Do you remember that? And just recently, the lame duck session of Congress here extended the Bush tax cuts. If you got the word tax cut, get that in your mind firmly? All right. Now, I did a series of programs here just a couple of weeks ago, and I said, no, that's not true, because, see, when the Bush tax cuts went into operation, it triggered the alternative minimum tax. It actually raised Americans' total tax bites by 10%. George Bush raised the average taxpayer's tax payments by 10% here in the United States. So when we're extending the tax Bush cuts, which were slated to expire on December the 31st, if that had been allowed to happen, your tax rates would have gone back to the 2003 level, which would have been a 10% tax cut. You actually would be paying 10% less money. So what we do is we call a tax increase a tax cut, and we call a tax cut a tax increase. That's what it really is. See, it's exactly backwards. But we buy it, and we believe it, and we practice it. See, if you were to ask the average American, are you a communist, he'd deny it. No, I'm not. But he goes to public school, 10th plank. Pays an income tax, second plank, has a checking account and credit cards, the fifth plank, and has a social security number, the eighth plank, and the other six, which are a little more obscure. But he's doing all of those also. Hey, listen, the guy's a practicing communist, and he denies it. He doesn't know that. He doesn't believe that, but that's where reality is at. All right. The public schools are designed to teach this kind of lie, this kind of deception. You send your children to public school, and he believes what he learns there. And he's actually being dumbed down. Now, we're telling him, we're educating you. No, we're not. No. We're not educating this guy at all. We are creating a robot here. This is indoctrination. So you have education and you have indoctrination. Public school system is there to indoctrinate. And all of you public school teachers are professional indoctrinators. That's what your job is. You're not there to ask questions and stimulate educational controversy. You're not there to raise an issue like I just did and say, is it true that 90% of violent crime here in the United States is done by black people? No, you don't dare raise an issue like that in the public school. That's free speech number one, and it's educational number two. You can't have that. You're going to indoctrinate these people. Don't you even bring that up. And so we carry that into the real life. Today, when you go to the airport, they treat everybody as if he's a terrorist. No. The only terrorists that we're having a problem with are the Muslims. You see, they'll take an old lady in a wheelchair, some white old German lady with gray hair, 80 years old, in a wheelchair, and they'll investigate her like she's a terrorist. Just exactly the same way as they do some guy dressed in a turban and robes over here. Listen, the guy in the turban and robes over here, now that guy might pose a problem, the old lady in the wheelchair doesn't. And then they come along, you know, and they say, well, we got to treat everybody. No profiling here. We're not going to racially profile people. Why not? If 60% of all of the crime in America is committed by blacks and 25% by Hispanics, as soon as the policeman hears that there's been a burglary down the street, immediately in his mind he says, well, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a Mexican or it's going to be a black. 9 times out of 10. 1 time out of 10, it's going to be white, American Indian, or Oriental. That's where reality's at. Schools don't teach reality. They've got this fiction. They've got this imaginary Alice in Wonderland, Disneyland concept of the world, which really doesn't work that way. Now, if you want your children trained in this Alice in Wonderland fairy tale, public school is the place to send them. Political correctness is the place that you learn this Alice in Wonderland nonsense. But, you know, it's a choice that you have to make, and then you get an outcome that comes from that. Now, here in America, we have about 10 million people unemployed, and they can't find work. They don't know how. They don't even got a clue. There isn't any unemployment. Unemployment says all of the work has been done. I can assure you that all of the work in America has not been done. There is a lot of work out there that needs to be done for $5 an hour. which, by the way, you cannot pay anybody $5 an hour because government says the minimum wage is $7 an hour, and all of you people with social security numbers, citizenship, and contact with the employment system, you can't work for $5 an hour. But I can assure you that there's plenty of work out there. There's no shortage of work. Hell, I've got work here for $5 an hour. And you're saying, well, I can't live on $5 an hour. Boys and girls, that's nonsense. One half of the people on this planet, 3 billion people, live on $5 a day or less. Now, if a guy in Namibia can live on $5 a day, you can live on $5 an hour. He's paying the same 30 cents a pound for rice that you are. Well, I can't live the way I want to live. Well, that's true. You won't be able to live the way you want to live. But that's an Alice in Wonderland fairy tale, and all of us Americans are going to have an opportunity to see what this socialist program that we've adopted over the last 75 years is going to pay off. It's going to pay off shortly, and it's going to pay off in spades. And, God, it's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. And that's the way God describes it. He says, you people are going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing your teeth when this thing comes to fruition. And that's because we've got a world view that's skewered. It's not true. It's phony. That's why homeschool is a better place to educate people. Now, if you can afford to send your kid to a parochial school like this lady, this black lady in Chicago, that's wonderful. I mean, I would like to send my kid to that school. That would be a great school to send your child to. This lady can only educate 30. I mean, it's a small school, and she doesn't have the funds to do 100 or 1,000. She's just not that big. But, hey, listen, there's lots of these little schools around. Remember John Adams went to a neighbor lady down the road for his education until he was 15? Then he went to Harvard. He just went from this lady's kitchen table to Harvard. Well, your children can do the same thing, and they can do it right now today in 2010, 2011, the 21st century. You can do the same things today that we've always done in this country. That means we've got to get off our dead heinies over here and do something intelligent to get an intelligent outcome or an intelligent conclusion that doesn't come from public school. Hey, I'm about out of time again. Let me give you a final reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. There's the signal says I got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.